fighting neighbor. Why don't we start in briefly with the childhood?
Okay.
Because it's rather interesting what I went through at that period.
Let me just date it here. This is October 1st, 1992. I'm in Santo Zingali's studio. Santo Zingali's studio on Winona Way in Madison. It's a lovely fall day. And we're going to start out by talking a little bit about Santos's early childhood.
Yeah. You see that thing? I just got it from Borod, just died recently. Mm-hmm. And I always wanted that thing, that holy statue there.
Yeah,
and he was Jewish, so he didn't believe in this stuff, but he liked the thing as it was for he just did. So his wife, Ruth, gave it to me.
It's beautiful.
Just got it the other day, and I cleaned it up and put it up there. Oh, it isn't that beautiful, actually. But early in my life, I must have been 4 or 5 years old, maybe 6 years old at the most. The grocery store and home was second floor, and the grocery store thrived in the first floor. It was bombed. Yeah, they threw a bomb underneath the, in those days, these houses that the Irish had built before we moved in. Was a crawl space, and they threw the bomb underneath there, and it tipped over 15 degrees, the whole damn house.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I was carried down after this Madonna sculpture fell on my head. It had a glass piece like that. It wasn't cased. I think it was the Virgin Mary. Who remembers? One of these things that Catholics pray for. And I remember I was taken across the street, and we didn't know what pajamas were in those days. All we had was underwear that we slept in the damn things. And there was my best girlfriend looking at me.
How old were you?
About 5 or 6, something like that. No more than that. Because I remember Mother chasing these characters out of the store. They came back and asked her if she had enough of what they gave her. So she took her butcher knife that she was cutting sausages with, remember that she was holding, running a grocery store, and chased 4 of them out with this knife.
Oh my.
And I remember seeing that. Yeah, she was a real tough lady. Well, that was part of my childhood that I grew up in this Third Ward. And the Third Ward is similar, in a sense, was as the ghetto areas are, with the blacks.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't that much difference.
What kind of ethnic groups were living in there?
No, we were all we were all Italians, and the Irish were moving out. The Irishman, the alderman, was a man by the name of Corcoran, and we referred to him as Tommy the Cork. It was very funny, and he was always elected because he saw to it that these Italian workers who knew nothing in handling the more complicated things in the pick and shovel, were put on gangs working for the railroad in the tracks and things. All they had to say was, "Tommy the Cork, I need a job," and he'd give it to them. He was, that's the way pretty much it ran. But little by little, the Irish moved up about 4 or 5 blocks up north, past Wisconsin Avenue in Milwaukee.
So that was sort of a step up for the Irish.
Yeah, oh sure, yeah. And I remember the Irish being very, very anti-Italian. I mean, in those days they were we were one step lower than they had been, you know. They had to
you
pick
always
on
have to
somebody.
Have someone, yeah.
So I was in kindergarten, and mother insisted that I go to a Catholic school. And although there was a grammar school right next door to us, practically. So my first semester I was there, I was picked on by the Irish. And they did as much as pull my pants down and spank me and things like that. Well, I lasted 2 months, and that was the end of that. Yeah.
You said that you had there was a lot of fighting, wrestling.
Oh, sure.
And that stuff.
Yeah, those things I learned how to do. how to protect myself.
Well, now, coming from a background, a tough background like that, how did you find yourself getting involved in the field of art?
I don't know. I know that I started drawing from copying pictures. You know, mostly Sunday papers. They always had beautiful Tarzan of the Apes and things like that, and horses. And I was a good horse drawer by the time I learned how to draw horse. I can't even draw horses as well as I did then anymore. Yeah, but I think during the time my last semester in college, or rather in high school, I was very much involved in athletics. And the same Irish boys that pestered me so much as a young kid were my pals and playmates. Mm-hmm. We played on the same teams. I remember that. We were invited to the Irish home, which were better than our home, but there it was. And, I can remember. One of these days I'll remember names.
What high school did you?
The Browns. Harry Brown and John Brown. That family. Mm. High school was Lincoln High School in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
It's not in existence anymore.
Yeah, I grew up in Milwaukee, where Lincoln is, Lower East Side.
Yeah, so we played together, won a championship. We played against Daring. He was a pretty good, he was twice as big as we were too. He used to run right through us and throw these beautiful passes. In fact, he landed a tryout with the Chicago Bears, and they never used him as a player. They used him as an entertainer because he could throw the ball behind himself and wherever, through a loop. He couldn't make the team, though, because I think one of the main reasons was that he couldn't remember anything. He was kind of stupid. John
Derry. Sure could throw.
Oh, yes, he could throw. And Goldenberg, he played with the Packers. He made
Buckets.
Buckets.
His name was Buckets, I think.
Yeah. I played against him one day at State Teachers College. I made the team. And I couldn't move this monument out of my way. I mean, it was too much to ask for me. I was 140 pounds. So he used to boom. I was going around. So I finally used to grab him between the legs and the suit and hang on for dear life.
Yeah. Did you ever, getting back to your art for a minute, did you ever get encouragement from your family, from your parents in that area?
Oh, sure. The minute I decided that, my older brother determined that pretty much. He asked me what I was going to do. The semester was coming. He says, "Your course, you're going to go to college." And I said, "Yeah, yes." And he was already in college playing. And he says, "Well, what are you going to do there?" I says, "I don't know. I says, maybe go in for athletics." He says, "Oh," he says, "anybody can do that." He says, "You know, you don't want to do that. Why don't you go in for the art department?" I didn't know what an art department was. In fact, I hadn't seen a painting. I saw some reproductions and things like that, maybe. But that's how it started. So he took me in, and at State Teachers College, and introduced me to the chairman of the department, whose name was Gustav Miller. He was he became my my friend in many ways. That's another thing. And I was in the art department only a couple weeks practically, and I became completely involved with it. Yeah, he took me to the Art Institute when he found out I'd never been there, and showed me what a painting was like. Yeah,
what was it like for you to go down to the Art Institute, developed this interest and all of a sudden seeing this?
Yeah, this is just like going to an opera house or something like that. I mean, just as magnificent. I've seen real paintings. I mean, I wasn't involved with art at all in that sense. The thing I was involved with was drawing. I'd like to draw. But I became completely immersed in the field of art then, little by little. He helped me a lot.
Now, what was his name again, the gentleman?
Gustav Miller.
Gustav Miller. Was Mr. Miller sort of your teacher for your years at UW, State Teachers College?
One of them, yeah.
Who were some of the
He eventually died. while I was there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the third year he died. That was quite a blow on me. Or was it the fourth year? Maybe the last year. Yeah, but von Neumann was there. Let's see, he was... yeah, Miller had invited him to come over and teach there. He was teaching painting also. And Howard Thomas, who went down south, I don't know whether his name ever came up again. Elsa Ulbrich was another dominating influence on me. She was a real swell lady, short. She liked people that we'd think were fairies or things like that, yes. You know. A lot of these people came and we'd kid her about, what are you doing with that queer? <It's> terrible things. I mean, in those days you could say things like that and get away with it, you know. But, of course, you never know who you're talking to. I hope I'm not insulting you anymore.
You're telling me how things used to be. This interview is all about.
Yeah, that's the way they were. And we had a couple boys in there that swaggered back and forth in the corridors. And one day I got influenced by this and started mimicking them. Hmm. And I was crossing the street going into the coffee shop across the street. I think it's still there in Milwaukee. And somebody whistled at me. So I turned around and hit him. So the other guy told this fellow, he says, don't you know who that is? That's the captain of our football team.
That's great. Did you... Wait a second.
They were nice boys.
When you were taking your art courses in college initially, what kind of art was... how was art taught at the Teachers College?
Oh, not too different than the way we're teaching it now. I don't think. Basics are basics, and the kids had to learn how to draw and paint, depending who you had. We got some New York artists here for a couple weeks at a time, and they were very insistent on painting like they were painting. Mm-hmm. And that's the extent that we had, involve students in other ways, but there was enough. I would think enough differences between, say myself as the very realistic person to, in a sense mostly there wasn't really a true abstractionist on campus. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was.
What was, is it possible to characterize what the dominating style was nationally at that point?
Well, don't forget, I'm, uh, 84 years old now. Who's to determine? I think most of the influence came through the press, mostly. Art magazines, the exhibits that came. I remember one exhibit we had, a very extreme paintings and direction was held at the Art Institute in Milwaukee. And there was quite an uproar over it. You know, some people just couldn't stand it, and other people, we thought nothing of it as students, of course, but the general population didn't go along with it.
I know I'm asking you to remember something a long time ago, but what was there about the particular exhibit that people got upset, that upset people so much? Do you recall it all?
Well, that was one of them. A very abstract work. And, gosh, I guess I wasn't influenced too much, was I? I can't remember much.
Did you, were you just, you said you were a naturalist initially? Was that, how did that develop, or did it just, is that just the way you drew?
No. There was, I was a realistic draftsman and painter, and I think more or less I haven't changed that much. If you look around, mm-hmm. My work is fairly realistic, mm-hmm. You know. I can't remember a faculty member that, other than people that came here from New York. That was a fellow by the name of Resnick. And all he did was, his paintings were large. In fact, the Art Institute in Milwaukee has it. He gave it to them. You take my painting, I won't charge you. He couldn't get rid of it, what it amounted to. And it was just a mannerism of paint gestures, mm-hmm. with the thing, with areas of color. And that was it. There was no reference to a thing or a figure. That's as extreme as you can get. And Pollock, of course, started that thing. And there were some students would be more interested in doing a thing like that than us teaching it. They'd get it from the from whatever they were looking at. And you allowed the student, you wanted to go that way, go ahead. I hope you luck.
Now you graduated from Teachers College, and then you taught in Milwaukee for a while. How did that work?
Let's see, you got me back to Teachers College.
Yeah, we're going to go back to Teachers College, and then you come to UW for your MFA or whatever it was called.
What happened was, Teachers College, I'm trying to remember the time. What the hell did I do? I needed a job.
There we go. Naturally.
So I was told, I don't know how I was told or who told me, but Country Day schools were interested in me because I had been a full football player besides being an artist. Well, you can understand they had fired the person that was teaching art there. I guess he was a little bit like a fairy, as although there was never any rumor to the fact that he practiced something that might have been queer. But they wanted a manly person teaching their boys, mm-hmm. what it amounted to, so I got the job. And I got a job, let's see, imagine this, for $15 a week, 3 days a week.
Oh my.
Yeah, and they had their damn school way out of country, and I didn't have a car, so I had to wait for the bus, so I was there all the day, all day for 3 days. For $15. So I guess just about the time that I became interested in politics, actually, what it amounted to.
What was it that got you involved in politics? Were there any particular events or issues?
No, I hung around with a gang of people at State Teachers College, and they knew so much more than I did. And I mean, they talked philosophy, and philosophy. I said, "What the hell's that?" You know. So, and I listened to these guys, and they went into politics, and I started reading up on politics and different directions. Socialism, and the communists was very much debate. Many of them would fight over Trotskyites against the Leninists, you know, mm-hmm. and you had to read up on this stuff in order to know what they were talking about. So I guess that's pretty much how I became involved with this group.
That's interesting. How would you define yourself in those early years in terms of, were you a communist, were you a
Not that
Trotskyite?
Really.
Or
no, I was being an individualist.
So you taught at Country Day for what? How long did you teach there?
3 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What happened was, if I may interrupt.
Oh, no, yeah, absolutely. It's your interview.
What happened was, besides working there, in the meantime, I got involved with the John Reed Club.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, interestingly enough, I just got through reading looking at a movie on the Reds.
Reds, yes, where they interviewed several people. John Reed. Yeah.
That was John Reed. And he was quite an influence, and they made a god out of him, the communists did. Although when he was alive, they treated him like a dog. If you remember some of the incidents in Moscow there, that's pretty much true. Yeah, he wasn't quite the true communist that the American communists wanted us to believe he was. But they still named the John Reed Club.
Hmm.
at least used his name to make the splinter group, and all we did was echo pretty much what the Communist Party wanted us to break. Pretty much. What did that bring that up for? Is that what you wanted to ask?
Well, yeah, well, that's what, I'm just trying to figure out how your philosophy is emerging in your...
That's how it was emerging. Yeah. I'd go to these parties. We used to hold, terrific parties. In fact, I had gotten to disagreement with my beautiful wife one day, and while the party was going on, and I left home and went to this party. Who's to know what the argument was about? And I started drinking martinis. That's where I learned all about martinis. I think I drank 13 martinis.
Oh my.
And somebody caught me as I went back. They dragged me home. Yeah, I was the misunderstood husband. I think she was a little mad at me for joining the clubs that I did. She was a marvelous lady. She was a Russian Jew. Mm-hmm. And the whole family came here running away from the communists. The Reds at that time and the White Army were fighting in the Mesmarinas. Somewhere on the border of Romania there. That's where they lived within Romania. So they were forced to run. And they took what goods they had. Mostly what Jews used to do quite a bit would practice, so they put their wealth into jewelry because it was easy to carry. And that's what they did, a lot of the relatives. So they found their way here in America.
That's really interesting. Yeah. We're going to be jumping back and forth in time a little bit. Let's jump back to Country Day now. You were developing developing some political understanding
about
at that,
that
point. Did you ever get in trouble at Country Day, for example, because of your politics?
Time I did.
What
that's
happened?
When I got fired at 30.
That's getting
year
in trouble.
That I was teaching there. And let's see, how did that go? Well, I was arrested because I was accused of being part of the gang that tipped over a patrol wagon. Hell, I was a block and a half away from the damn thing, you know. And I saw, you could just see the patrol wagon and a bunch of workers tipping it over. I mean, there it was. And I made a quick sketch of the thing, and I don't even know where it is anymore. And somehow or other, the head of the Communist Party at that time was a man by the name of John Childs. Joan will answer it.
Yeah.
Maurice Childs. And he wanted a bunch of us to go down there supporting to... workers there that were on parade. They had a good crowd down there. And so he gave all the, we didn't know any about this, but subsequently information has come that this character was a double agent.
Oh.
Yeah. And the detectives, the police department knew exactly where the Communist Party was active and what it was going to do with guys like him. He wasn't the only one. He had a brother also that was doing the same thing. And it came out, I should go and get that book in the library that he wrote what had happened. Because there was no other way that they would have known a teacher from the Country Day School was sketching or at the scene of the crime, so to speak. That's the only way they could have known it. The next day I was hauled, they came in, two detectives came into my home, which at the time was next to the grocery store that my mother father had. And that was a poor neighborhood, so I really never got out of that poor neighborhood. And they took me away. They said, you're under arrest. And I couldn't find out what the hell was what. You know, they said, we don't know. We're just two poor, stupid detectives. So they hauled me in. And it hit the papers, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what, did they just dismiss you just like that?
Well, we had a scene, a courtroom scene, I forget. You know, that's that never was very important in my life. I testified against the charge, and they had three other young men there that I didn't even know that were part of the the gang tipping over the patrol wagon. So I was probably the only person that wasn't really involved in the sense of going around this place. But when I was arrested, you know, I found out about something about the running of the police station. They had a Captain Dax there. They had thrown me into jail, and I was spending a night in jail. And my wife couldn't even get to talk to me. Refused all communication. And then I was ushered in that morning to his office, and then two detectives were there. And he said, and he had a drawing of a an outline drawing of the police station, of the police wagon. What do you call them? The patrol wagon?
Yeah, paddy wagon.
Paddy wagon? Yeah. Yeah, and he said, you were on this side of the patrol wagon, and you were on the other side when it was tipped over, and you ran so you wouldn't get through. And he says, now don't forget it. And I began to be like a smart aleck. And where was I? And they said, you were right over here in the middle. So in court, when they came out for them to testify, they got their material all screwed up. The judge, yeah, he says, it was funny.
So what did the judge
they
say?
They threw it out of court. That was the end of it.
But you still got fired.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I got fired. Yeah, that didn't matter. The publicity is what they didn't like. And it came out that they accused me of being a communist, and I have nothing to deny until a year or so later when, what was it? When they came into Finland there, when the Red Army invaded Finland, and the period where Stalin and Hitler made this pact. Yeah, that's what tore the whole communist system organizations apart. We just quit right and left. That was it.
Were you among those who quit?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Hell, I wasn't going to stay with any dictator that... particularly that was fighting with Hitler.
Well, now, you're fired from Country Day. Where did you go from there?
Well, let's see. Country Day.
Was that when you went to Leighton School of Art?
Oh, I had been Leighton School at night.
Oh, I see.
No, that happened. I think things just ran into each other. The WPA Art Projects opened up. And I was part of that, one of the first that that was organized. And, Alcester was part of that. And myself, let's see, who else came from? Watrous was in on that. He was painting, he painted a mural for the, under the works, it was a different organization, but it was part of the...
Yeah, it was a federal arts project under the Works Projects Administration.
Yeah, that was. I never did memorize that stuff. And that was a real... I learned more there than any other place.
How did that... tell me how that whole thing...
Well, you know, you had painters, sculptors, guys that made lithographs. I mean, we went right through that. We had this... a big building on Broadway Street. It was a former school, right next to a church there. And I think they tore that down, unfortunately. We had a big auditorium there that we used to make our murals, if we had to make them that way. I remember I had my cartoon that I designed was done on wrapping paper. This stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pasted it all together, and it was 12 by... 24, about 30 feet long, something wide. I'm glad they destroyed it. my first mural, unless you consider a small 6x9 a mural, too. But I learned an awful lot there.
How were you chosen? How did the selection process?
Well, process... every young artist will, in those days, we had a lot of competitions.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, we don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
And you hand in your painting, and if you made it, you were given some publicity. And that doesn't mean that the painting was bought. More often than not, they
mm-hmm.
didn't buy them.
Yeah, right.
But that's where reputation started. And national exhibits, there were a lot of national exhibits in those days too, and they just went by the wayside. I don't know why, but they do.
So did you end up applying for the federal project grant or
oh, heavens,
jobs?
They were looking for artists.
They were looking for you, okay. That's what I wanted to know.
Our reputations were known among the different people, like Elsa Ulbrich knew who was good in designing furniture. She was the handicraft project was better organized and did more competent work than even the painters did. And they designed and office furniture for furniture that went into public buildings. They hated each other. Yeah, Elsa Ulbrich and what was her name? Charlotte Partridge. They'd see each other in public, and they'd go into each other and slap each other's back, and how nice to see you. And as they turned around, the bitch or something. They didn't like each other.
Yeah,
they were good. And
so you were all essentially selected, and you were put into this big building, and you were given supplies, and
sure.
you were paid a stipend per
sure.
month, and you were just told to go, or did they give you directions? Or
It happened. It didn't happen quite that easy. They tried to run the the project. We always called it the project as easy as possible on us, so that wouldn't so that the mechanics would not disturb us too much.
Mm-hmm.
Put it that way. We had studios. Al and I rented a studio, and other people did. Or if you wanted to work at the project, you could.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I worked at the project for a while when I was painting this mural. And but other than that, I used to work in my own studio. The studio was. Do you know Milwaukee at all?
Oh yeah, pretty well.
Okay, do you know that area between State and Kilburn?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
on
well.
Blankenton Avenue.
Yep.
It's a little park now.
Yep.
It used to be a building there, an office building.
Hmm.
Yeah. And the corner on State Street there had on the third floor had a nice studio.
Hmm.
Al had that for a while. But he and I used to have a studio together. Let's see, we paid, spent about $10 a month between the two of us mm-hmm. to paint in the studio. It was a room about as big as this room.
Mm-hmm.
And first it used to be an office building, but I imagine this was where the storage room was for some company. And we had these... windows lined up pretty much like that with a quartz window.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't as high from the floor as this, probably 3 feet high from the floor, then about 10 feet high, 8 to 10 feet. And they opened the windows, and we'd see rats scurrying around. It'd be a little in land, this much of land that the people could walk on. Mm-hmm. That had to do things to the building, I guess. And actually, we used to get into rats in the toilet bowls.
Oh my!
Yeah, we'd put plaster of Paris, I think it is, stuff like that, in the food. They'd eat it, and then they'd be so damn thirsty, they'd dive into the water, into the bowl, and there they were. Terrible.
I guess you looked before you sat, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Al was a good painter to be with, because he painted these small pictures about this size with big for him. And I painted big monsters.
There you go. Was there kind of a, describe the, at that point in time, the, was there a little Madison, was Milwaukee art community
sure.
that was thriving?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there was all of that. Well, let's see, there was also one that was even a little more interesting, because Elsa Ulbricht was involved in this. You know, she was quite a lady. Elsa was, she was the original, let me think of some movie queen who was outrageous for a professor to be. She came in a, we got invited to a walrus club party. That
oh,
was
yeah.
a walrus club. Is that still in
yes,
existence?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And, gee, I thought this was me, you know, I'm Italian from from the ward, being invited to this party. But she saw to it that I got in there with, I don't know who the other guy was. Maybe it was Volk. Probably it was Volk. But she came in underwear. I mean men's underwear with a flap on the rear. That was it. That's all she had on. And Garrett Sinclair started chasing her around. He wanted to open her flap. He finally clawed her. And all these ladies, men looking, laughing like hell. I mean, these people, you know, once they had a couple drinks, were all right.
And this was a walrus club?
Yeah. this was part of it. And finally, he got a hold of her and got her flap open. She walked around bare bass.
Boy, that's the.
They'll probably deny this.
That was
this
different from the walrus happened. Club I've come to know.
You can tell them the story if you want.
I will. I will. I know somebody from that club right now. That's great. So there was this little kind of an artist commune in Milwaukee.
Oh, there, yeah. We had.
Did you have any hangouts that you went to, like? Bars or anything that you were...
Sure, on Wells Street. We used to go there. It was after... Where were we? I can't figure out where the hell we used to go. No, besides going there. Oh, we used to have night classes. Mm-hmm. Free classes like learning how to use lithograph.
You give them to each other, is that it? Or
No. This is something... Elsa Ulbricht started this. Teaching... at night as an extra course without any credit. It had nothing to do with that. We all wanted to know how to do lithographs, and Al was one of the guys there, and he got involved with that. And he, as you know, he became pretty damn good at
yes,
it.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. In fact, I got a whole bunch of his out in view downstairs. And Sinclair and von Neumann is another one that joined the group. Mm-hmm. But we used to throw parties at the John Reed Club.
there you go. Sounds wonderful. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, the John Reed Club had a lot of parties. But I got fired from it.
From the John Reed Club?
No.
From?
We were talking about...
Oh, from the Country Day.
Country Day School, yeah. Yeah, they were denying that my lack of employment was not due to might be arrested. Damn fools.
What did they say? What reason were they saying that you were...
It was just one of those things that the school economics determined this. I don't know, something like that. They could find some
blah blah blah
blah blah. Yeah. I wouldn't remember anymore.
So the works project, the federal art thing, it was a very helpful to you in your career.
I learned more about painting in those 3 years and or 4 years practically. And Al and I were called to deny the charges that we were communists. Mm-hmm. They were 1938. They were just knocking all the so-called communists off the projects, and we happened to be the two that were knocked off in 1938 and 39. Yeah, and they held a court for us. The Attorney General was there. I forget his name. And a couple of FBI people and other people concerned with having us fired. And we were fired off the project despite the fact that we didn't deny we had been communists at one time, but we're no longer communists. They wanted to know what proof we had that we weren't. I says, do you need proof if a person drops from the Republican Party? Yeah. And then one of the guys there wanted to get up and punch me. I'm glad he did. He looked pretty good.
So you were essentially fired again because of your political beliefs.
Sure. Al was fired too.
Al Sessler was fired as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Before we get to where you went from there, while we're on the topic, what about federal, what are your thoughts now on federal financing of art, federal aid to art?
Well, I'll tell you, when I graduated from the school of teaching here, when I retired, I made a statement in the paper. They asked me what I thought of federally run projects. I said I thought that they should resurrect those projects, particularly after the project, the handicraft project and the painting sculpture projects proved to be so valid, and it would give the young artists a chance to at least stay alive, a chance to paint, you know, or sculpt, or do handicraft work. And a couple of the guys objected to the statement on campus. Mm-hmm. Now, is that what you wanted to know?
Yeah, well, I just want to know what your feelings on that. You still think they should?
Sure.
Why did they object to it? They just disagreed with you?
Well, maybe it's because they forgot how it was when they were young.
Good point. Good point. How did you end up going to Madison for your graduate training?
I had to get away from Milwaukee. Absolutely. I couldn't get a job there anymore. Mm-hmm. Let's see, I got a job finally. That isn't quite right. I left Milwaukee to come to school here. That was it, to get a master's degree and go on with my life. So in that sense, I had to leave Milwaukee to do this. And I graduated. It was time for me to get a job. There's nothing around Madison other than working at the sausage company there. What was it?
Oscar Mayer.
Oscar Mayer's. I put in my stint there too. And so I got some jobs. I had some connections in Milwaukee. And I got a job at Gorder, Pesky and Fry. I think that was the name of the thing. And some other industrial place. This was during the war. Mm-hmm. We had just started. And I couldn't take that at all. Actually, I worked for about a year between one job there and some other place in in the valley there. And I quit. That was the end of that.
You weren't fired this time, though. You quit.
I quit.
Okay, we're going to quit right here because we're going to turn... yes, please. No sugar, though. Okay. We're going to start out with your almost forgotten naval career there.
That was just a joyride for me. Yeah. It was the last year and a half that we were in 43 or 44. What was it? 44. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 44. And I had quit my job, so the people that be that were concerned with people quitting work like that, they nailed me. They drafted me in. And Al wanted to get in too. And he had a bum arm. He was sort of one of those things he was born with. Mm-hmm. Forget which arm it was. His right arm, I guess. And so we both went to get our physical. And he didn't make it, of course, because of his bum iron. And I had alopecia areata at the time. Hey, how about that? You don't know what this means, huh?
No idea.
I got one on you.
You sure do.
It's bald spots.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know what the word areata means, but that's what it's called. And there's no cure for it, really. In fact, the man that I have my work with in Milwaukee, the Barrett Gallery on Prospect Avenue, it's a marvelous building, one of the old buildings, mm-hmm. and he made an art exhibition space to sell paintings, actually what it amounts to. And he's got it too, completely bald. Hmm. That's all it is. It isn't syphilis and it isn't anything like that. When I went to my doctor, you know, I got up one morning, I had three spots in my head. I was living with my sister-in-law, that's while my wife was here in Madison. I was working at the factories. And she says, "My God, what happened to you?" And I says, "Something wrong with me?" She says, "You got bald spots in your head." And I rushed to the bathroom. Sure enough, there were one right here, one there, you know, one there. I says, "My God." So I knew a doctor by the name of Bender. It's important that I tell you about him. He was known as the worst doctor in town. But still, he was a friend. He knew a little bit, and that's about it. And he says, "Have you been out with women lately?" He examined me and looked at it. And I looked at him, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Well, it's just every indication that you have syphilis." I says, "What?" I knew it wasn't possible. Absolutely, I was clean as could be. And I told him this. He says, "Well," he says, "that's it." He says, he gave me some oily material and shoved it on there in a heat lamp. And I was in his office there for about a half hour and told to continue the medication. And I didn't particularly believe this guy anyway. So in the meantime, one of my friends in this group of intelligentsia, they primed themselves as being very, very articulate, very intelligent. They knew everything that was to be known of the day. These seven people had that inclination to make you believe it. Mm-hmm. I was treated as an ordinary person. So they got me in contact with this Viennese doctor, who was a doctor concerned with skin problems and things like that. What's the name for it, you know?
Dermatologist, yeah.
Okay, correct. And I went to him, introduced myself, and I told him the story and the story of what my doctor had told me. And when he heard what I what my doctor had told me, he just laughed and laughed and laughed. He says, "You got nothing but..." I forgot. How did I say it?
I don't know. You said it real well, though. Areolitis was the word.
Something like that, I know.
Yeah.
I used to know the name right away. And I says, well, what's it from? He says, I don't know. He says, we know it's around, but we don't know why. He says, we think it's due to nervousness, anxiety, things like that. He says, I can't give you any medication for it. And he says, all I can do is tell you that maybe in time as you simmer down, why you'll have to get rid of it. So sure enough, a year and a half in the Navy, I came out clean.
How about that? So when you quit the Navy, how did you, what steps brought you to the faculty at UW?
I was hired at State Teachers College first.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's start there then.
Yeah, I went there. I got a call from Mr. Baker, President Baker, who was then the chief man in there, wonderful person. And he knew me, and he knew my brother, he knew the family quite well. And he says, how would you like to teach for us? I was just out of the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And he had heard about my problems too. He knew all about them, didn't concern him. And he said, are you still a communist? And I said, no. He says, okay. That was it. And I was hired, and then in the meantime, my wife had moved to Madison, and she was working here at the powder factory on near the Dells there, in that Dells area.
Oh, Badger Ammunition Works, yeah. It's
probably that, yeah.
Badger Ordnance.
Yeah,
Badger
so
Ordnance.
She was there working. I don't know what the hell she was doing there, but she was. And then they hired her to teach. They heard about her. Her reputation had preceded her here in Madison.
Mm-hmm.
The Russian department knew all about her.
Mm.
So they grabbed her right away.
Mm.
And unfortunately, she didn't have a degree.
Oh.
Not a degree. She had a teaching degree,
yeah.
A two-year teaching degree. And that's all the schooling she had in terms of degree. So that was unfortunate for her because she never could progress and get the money she should have been getting. They took advantage of her.
Mm.
Well, what was the question you asked?
How you came to UW.
Oh, okay. So, well, I had spent some time here at the UW.
Mm-hmm.
They
right.
knew all about me. And I think Al must have suggested that they contact me, and he didn't even know I had a job. And I got this phone call and from Della Wilson, wanted to know if I'd be interested in teaching there, and I preferred teaching there to the school in Milwaukee. I had too many things to counteract to teach there. It was certainly not the place for me.
Before we get you right here with at Madison, there's one question I forgot to ask. You entered the Navy for a year and a half. Did your political leanings of your earlier years, did that cause any problems with you being in the Navy?
No. No. When I was at serving my time at, I was at Great Lakes doing some work there for them also. I was the artist that, somebody came into our barracks, what it amounted to, and wanted to know if anybody could draw, and I put up my hand. Well, I had my hand up more times than anybody else, so they hired me. I could paint, I could draw, I could make cartoons, I could draw from photographs. So my job was to a drawing or two a day of, as fast as I could make them actually, of vice admirals and admirals.
Huh.
So they have all these drawings that I made from photographs, of course.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And I'd do one in the morning, then I'd go and take off and have coffee and stall around and do another one the day after. It took me maybe an hour and a half to do a drawing. So I did that for quite a while until the Captain Chaplin, incidentally to you.
Captain Chaplin.
called me in, and I assumed that he wanted some artwork done. You know, what else could I assume?
Yeah.
And I knocked on the door, he said, come in, and opened the door, and I came in, and there's this character pretending that he's busy. And I knew all about this business, you know. And I had said seaman, first class, second class, sir, and yes, and I saluted, and he kept me saluting for quite a while. And I coughed, you know, and I finally looked up, at ease, sailor, you know. And that's the way it went. So they asked me questions, all political. Hmm. They had my record right in front of them. The FBI had done their job real well.
There you go.
Yeah. So I said, he accused me of being yellow because I was still working at the Great Lakes place there. And I said, I've been ready ever since I got in to do some fighting. And he says, no. Well, he left me with a sad admonishment that I was the type of fellow that would sneak out of a tight spot when fighting got tough, praying that I wouldn't get killed while the rest of my comrades were also praying not to get killed. And I said, well, I said, what's the use of my praying? Nobody's going to help me. He says, get the hell out of here. That's the way it went. Yeah, he really came right into it.
Okay, now we're getting into the UW years. I'm going
to... UW, we're all through it.
With your art department, I mean. You're being hired by the art department here at
yeah,
UW.
Yeah, well, that's about all there is to it.
Well, but let's talk about some of the people. You've already mentioned Della Wilson.
Yeah.
What was the art department like when you first came here?
Well, the best person they had was, of course, this young man that I talked about. What was his name?
McCloy. McCloy, yeah.
Yeah, his father, incidentally, was in charge of the well, he was in charge of seeing to it that the Navy or the armed forces had good exercises and all that sort of stuff. I don't know too much about it, but he was a bigwig in the Army. And McCloy himself was a damn good artist, actually. And he needed a change, I guess, so he left, is what it amounted to.
Yeah, I see on the material I sent you that he was an instructor for about 4 years and then an assistant professor, and he left in 1948 about.
Yeah.
Came here in 37.
Yeah, he was 37 he came here?
Yeah, something like that, about that, I think.
He didn't get in the Army, huh?
38. He was, according to this at least, he was here for the whole, for the duration of the war, so.
That's funny. I didn't know that of him. Yeah. Come to think of it, I had him as in my instructor when I came back to school here during the war years there. And he was the one of the few people that I thought anything of. Yeah. Watrous, another one, of course.
Yeah, I was going to say Watrous was here.
Keenitz is kind of volatile type of person, but he'd say we knew each other. We went to school with Gene. He was a year or so ahead of me, but he came out here before I did.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd start the class, and I'd come in late or something like that, and he'd say, oh, here comes the communist. Sit down, don't disturb the factory. He'd say all sorts of things, crazy. He livened things up.
I'll bet.
Yeah, he was funny. And he told me, get off from that chair back there and come on out here in the front row. And I wouldn't move. Well, he says, that's what you get with familiarity.
That's great.
He was a great man. But he and Watrous just didn't get along.
Yeah.
I don't know why. You know, but Watrous got to be the chairman at one time, of course. And John wanted that job in the worst way. Yeah. That's what I hear. But he died.
Now he.
What did he get fired for? Oh yeah, I remember. He was off his nut at the time. He.
Now we're talking about
Keenitz.
Keenitz, okay.
Yeah, if you're interested.
Yes, I am. I am very interested.
He, as much as I know about this situation, he had a graduate class. And let's see, people that were in graduate school, And he flunked practically, I think he flunked the whole damn room.
Oh my.
Yeah, well, that was too much. I think he was a little off his nut, finally.
Hmm.
He died in California a few years later. It was sad because he had a lot of abilities, really.
What about Della Wilson? I've heard her name mentioned.
Della? She was a nice lady.
What else can you say? What about William Varnum? Did you know
he was an ass.
Why?
Huh?
Any particular reason?
He didn't know what he was talking about half the time. I'll give you an example. I had to take a course. First of all, he didn't want me to come into the class, into the graduate class here at school. And he said that my undergraduate degree in Milwaukee wasn't adequate. I didn't have enough science courses. So, make a long story short, I went up to Keenan and told him about it. What is this guy throwing all these obstacles in my way from getting into graduate school here? And he says, oh, boy, that jackass, and all one thing or another. And so he said, come along with me. So we went and saw the graduate school. He knew him. He says, hey, and this is word for word.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I want you to, I'm introducing you to an artist genius. I looked at him, I said, Jesus Christ, I said to myself, what is this guy doing? And, well, I didn't know he had this relationship with this assistant graduate person. And he says, so what is the problem? So I told him that the chairman wanted me to go into some undergraduate courses, and I felt that I had adequate number of courses already. And he says, like what? I says, well, in science. I says, I've never been particularly interested in some of these science courses. He says, you don't like them? He says, no. He says, how do you like about geography? I says, well, if I have to take it, I'll take it. He says, you mean you're not interested in? No, I says, I'm interested in art. That's the way the conversation. And he says, well, okay. He says, you're in. That's all I was doing. Varnum was pretty pissed off at me.
He was.
Yeah. But he had ridiculous ideas on camouflage. He took a piece of clay, flattened it out 3/4 inch, about this wide, and then on this side, he had clay coming up, same dimension, and that was the sky, went that far, and over here, it came to an abrupt end, and then he had little trees. That was his camouflage. I says, you know, I wanted to get in school. He says, what do you think of it? I says, well, I think you ought to work on it a little more. He was funny. We kept one class. We found out that he had this camouflage book that he assigned to us to read. We found out that he was just one lesson ahead of us.
Oh, really?
At a time.
Uh-oh.
You know, so we got two lessons ahead of him. And he didn't know what the hell we were talking about. We were 4 in the class. Ridiculous.
Yeah, I noticed that he was, I only take this chart back to 3031, and he was chairman of the
That's
art
right.
department from 30 until 44, and maybe before 30, I don't know.
That's right, it nearly killed him. It really did kill him.
Being chairman of the department?
Yeah, no, not being chairman. They voted him out.
Oh, and they voted him out.
When the other three found out that was
Stebbins,
Annan, and Wilson, when they found out that he was getting all the raises, and they were getting nothing, or very minimal. So they got mad and voted him out. That was that simple, as chairman.
Yeah.
So then Della Wilson became chairman. And she wasn't bad as a chairman, actually. The funniest story I have to tell on that is, you want to listen to this?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
That's sneaking, telling on Meeker.
Well, we were going to talk about him later on anyway, so let's just... Might as well
he was a funny man. Yeah.
Dean Meeker, right?
Dean, yeah. He was he was all involved with Oscar Wilde and other brash literary groups, persons like that. It was the second year we were there, and of course the old people, they were the through professors. We were all assistant professors by that time. We were part of the executive committee. Assistant professors are never part of the executive committee. They got most of the money, of course. Mm-hmm. They were in a position to vote themselves in a good thing. And we got pittance. We were Al and I and Meeker. Anderson was there yet? Yeah, he came. Mm-hmm. That's about one or two other people.
I can just read the names real quickly. George Dietrich, Frederick Logan, Robert Grilly, Arthur Viertthaler, and John Wilde. That was pretty much the early group that just came in after the war.
Well, John wasn't still, was not there.
Okay, yeah, he came a little later.
Yeah. Meeker was very irate, swearing and cussing. And Della Wilson came in just in time to hear him saying that he was going to quit. And she says, "What for?" "Well, I'm not getting enough pay here. And if I'm not getting enough pay, I'll quit." He said, "Well, my dear boy, go ahead and do it. We'll get somebody else. Where's that effect?" Poor Meeker.
That's called calling a bluff. Now, let's go back to something we didn't quite... I wanted to do one follow-up on that. You said Varnum being voted out really killed him. I noticed that the year after he left as chairman, he was professor, and the year after that, he was gone. Did he die?
That's right. Sure, he died just that fast. That's why I said what I did. Sure.
And the people, Wilson and the others, weren't aware of the fact that he was getting more money as chairman?
That's right.
Wow.
Sure, they never knew this, that he was getting all the... He was telling them, well, the department was not voted any money. Words left until they
what a
they
sneak.
Had enough. Yeah, until they... I suppose somebody went to the dean and complained about this, that they weren't getting enough. So the dean told him, well, it's up to your chairman and your executive committee. So they went to work then on it.
I notice another person who subsequently became chair was Wan Annan.
Oh yeah, Annan.
Could you tell me a little bit about...
Her problems was that she had her electrician husband directing the activities of our department.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, it was pretty bad. And she wouldn't make a move without his say-so, I guess, practically. We couldn't prove it, but mm-hmm. that's the way it was. And she was sort of obnoxious. I have no love for her at all. She was the one that got the, when she became chairman, she was voted in by the then executive committee, which was three other people. Mm-hmm. So they used to circle this around. But... we had this meeting of the whole faculty, and we hardly sat down, and that's when Carlton Ball was here.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't I tell you this?
Yeah, but that was off mic, so let's talk about it. You can go into that again.
And she says, "I'm opening the meeting. Come to an order." She says, "First thing on the agenda, Carlton Ball has resigned as a member of our department. Isn't that right, Mr. Ball?" "Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am." He didn't fight back. That was the only thing I was... I guess it took him so much in surprise that he didn't...
Now, that was because of his... the fact that he was... I can't remember why he was fired. Why she fired him.
Well, he had been monkeying around with a student.
Oh, with monkeying around with a student.
And
that's it.
And she got pregnant. And he did all right. I mean, they got married and all.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know too much more than that about
but that was the chairman. A chairman had that much power that they could...
Well, he agreed to... he had agreed, as far as we were concerned, he had agreed to resign, the way she put it.
Oh, my.
You know, I mean, she didn't ask for his resignation.
Mm-hmm. She simply said, I see.
She said, you have resigned from our department.
Oh, my.
Pretty much that way.
Yeah.
I mean, where he knew what was going, what happened immediately. And I saw him, oh heavens, it wasn't too much longer, maybe 5 years later, I was out in Southern California teaching in that same department
mm-hmm.
for the summer. And let's see, Crown was his name, Painter Crown, and his wife. And they took my house, and nice studio, and I moved into their house. Goddamn dump.
Out in L.A.?
Well, the house was like this, but the studio was a shed.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Hell, I never did the painting in that shed at all. I don't know how he did. So when my wife got in there, why, they had a table that had a crack right down the center of the table, all full of red ants.
Oh, my.
And Olga was, well, compared to this present wife, she was just so meticulous mm-hmm. about things, particularly red ants. And she blew her casket, wrote a letter to him, you know, and I didn't know a damn thing about this, that she was writing a letter to these people, and they wrote back a letter to the effect that her sister had come into my studio checking on something. I don't know what. I didn't tell her to come in my place, so I don't know what that was all about. But that was it.
Can we talk for just a minute about some of the other people who had been in the department a long time when you arrived? Because a lot of these people, their names are just names to me, and I'd like to know whatever you
like
can
who?
Fill in. Like Roland Stebbins, for example.
He died. He was a nice man. He was a good artist.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the good artists that mm-hmm. they had in the department. Except he didn't, he had no pizzazz on him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he let these ladies do as they wished. He mm-hmm. wouldn't fight them at all. That was the only thing I had against him. But he was a good artist. I got a couple of his paintings downstairs.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I'll show them to you.
Yeah, he was here until about 1950 or so.
Sure.
Is that when he died? So he kind of drops right off the chart here.
Well, 16. I think he died probably then, yeah.
Yeah. What about Frank Moulton?
Moulton.
He was a lecturer for a long time.
Oh,
here,
him. I didn't know him.
Okay. Wayne Claxton, I guess he must have left right about the time you were coming.
Yeah, but I didn't know him.
Howard Doak?
I don't know him.
Okay. And Joseph Livermore?
Who are these people?
These are people who were all instructors or assistant professors in the art department, and they were leaving right about the time you were coming.
Oh,
and I just thought perhaps you might know George Dietrich.
I knew him. We all knew him. He came on campus. Of all the people that recommended him was Al Sessler. I could have kicked his ass for it. He was a former teacher of his, you know, and he got bamboozled by him in Milwaukee. He went to the Leighton Art Gallery School there. Al did. And George Dietrich came on campus with his Navy uniform. Ensign.
Hmm.
Is that the lowest grade there?
Mm-hmm.
Off?
I don't know.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And he never took the damn uniform off for months. I mean, believe me. And finally went through the business of taking the buttons off, you know, and wearing it as a blue suit. But he used to run classes that were... I mean, the guy was a very capable man, actually. Mm-hmm. He did some pretty good sculpture when he was a young guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he just... must have lost it all. I don't know why.
Hmm.
And used to run these classes. They come. Kids would come in. We have to have a little music, and so they'd play banjos and things like that during the class period. And if you were a serious student, why, you only got a B.
Oh, that's interesting.
Otherwise, you get an A.
Yeah, he wasn't here for too long. He was only
we
for,
fired him.
4 or 5 years.
Yeah, we were all against him.
Now, when you came along with a group of other young artists right after the war, and you really changed the complexion of the art department, it seems like.
Yeah.
Kind of, I'm talking about people like Fred Logan. And was there any problems between kind of the young Turks, you guys coming in, and the older people who had been here for a long time?
Of course.
Talk
there
about
always
that.
Is.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's just the problem right there. They were here old and out of step, and we came with a lot of vigor. And imagine, you know, running a sculpture class, making little cigarette smoking trays and little doilies. Well, no, doilies wouldn't be. Little junky stuff, mm-hmm. you know. And that was the sculpture class. Or the pottery class. She was teaching pottery. And
who's she?
Della Wilson.
Della Wilson.
Yeah. And Dietrich was teaching the sculpture. Well, he didn't do anything creatively anymore, and this reflected on the students. And I guess he just didn't teach that way, or made him aware of sculptural forms, one thing or another. But Della was a nice lady, but she was out of it, I guess. That's all you had to be aware of, you know. There's nothing to it, her room. I know Anderson had a run-in with her one day. What the hell was it? He got damn mad at her, and pretty nervy, actually. He went right in her class and took something out of that, her class that he had was using as a teaching device, and just walked out. And she was so abashed by it that she let it ride. That was the end of it. You know, Anderson had a lot of nerve.
Mm-hmm. Kind of got that feeling from interviewing him.
Yeah. He wasn't afraid to speak his mind. He's sick now, really, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Well.
So you guys, did this young group of the Young Turks, did you come in and sort of take over the art department or redirect it, or how did that?
I think we redirected it, yeah. It was so that they were aware of of student behavior, the way they talked to her or both any of these people as to what we were doing in classes. And it was quite evident that it was affecting their usefulness in our department, because Della quit. She tried her darnest to be part of the gang, but it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you can't make a sculpture out of a piece of ashtray into a Michelangelo.
Yeah.
Incredible. They were nice. Yeah. She was a nice lady as a person.
Yeah. You know,
but they weren't artists at all.
Did they understand that?
You damn right they understood it.
Did they react? Well, you said she tried to become one of the gang. Were any of them able to get incorporated into the new swing of things? And
I guess not.
Yeah. It really changed quickly. I'm looking at this chart. Yeah. It's amazing that before world, like right up to about 1950, these older people had all been there since like 1930, and then they all just quit at once, it seemed, or within a couple of year period.
Yeah, they were out of it. Helen Annan was decided that she didn't want to teach anymore, and it was the period where Anderson became chairman for the summer. He was a fink. And Helen Annan had tendered her resignation to the chairman, and that in turn was, I think, given to Anderson, and he in turn sent it up, this lady's retiring.
Mm-hmm.
So within a week or so, she changed her mind, and Anderson was the chairman then, and she says, I want my resignation back. I've decided to continue teaching. He says, I'm sorry, I already handed it in. That's it. he wouldn't change. That's the one good thing he did.
That's the one good thing he did. Let's talk a little bit about the new breed of artists coming in after the war. One person who became chairman just a few years after he came as an assistant professor was Frederick Logan. Could you tell me a little bit about Professor Logan?
I don't know much about him, actually. He was adequate. I think he was comparable to a high school principal. He's just a little bit mechanical about his thing. I know he came into my department and one day when I was lecturing, and I get nervous when somebody else comes in of a comparable talent, you know, and listens to you speak, lecture, and I says, what the hell is he doing here, you know, and he was surprised at what I knew, you know, that was it. He says, damn good lecture. And I said, gee, thanks. I said, well, what the hell were you doing in my classroom? You were making me nervous. I don't. He says, oh, I just heard that you were talking, so I wanted to see, hear what you were saying. Something like that.
That's interesting. And Al Sessler came about the same time you did, as a matter of fact.
Oh, he was here a year before.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Here a year before him.
Oh, and then he...
And a
graduate. Okay,
and then he came here. And I might say that he got the idea coming here from me.
And so. Did he subsequently help you come back here then?
Sure.
Yeah.
I think he did.
Yeah. When did he start? Was he developing his reputation as a real good artist at that point?
Oh, sure. Yeah. He was always known for years that he was a damn good black and white man. And he did these charming little paintings, you know, like this. And they're very much like his black and whites.
Yeah.
Strange figures that he was to paint.
Did he ever tell you what inspired him to paint that, you know, do such things in such small, and also the kind of figures he came up with? Did he ever?
Oh, you knew it. I mean, these things were crafted for people that, if people saw them, that... were artists, they would know it was good.
Yeah, it was really, you showed me some. Sure. Well, we were looking at some before.
What else is there to say about it?
You know, they're just good. Excellent. They're just wonderful. Sure. And we already talked a little bit about Dean Meeker. He came about the same time, too, right?
He was a real stinker.
Yeah.
I mean, he used to really do nasty things. Don't write that down, though. He was very competitive. I mean, so much that... he was unabashed if even you knew about it. That's the way it is, Zingali. Complaint. So one day I saw him going, he came up the stairways. Let's see, I was the first one that realized the room selection on the fourth floor of that education building, the top floor. Was exactly made for painters. It had glass roof and all that, and two rooms, and then it had this platform that was just made for still life arrangements. So, you know, I was teaching, I became very selective. I went into beginning painters, and then if any graduate student wanted to study with me, that was a different thing, he'd come in. But Dean had no room. He started this serigraph technique. And the second year came around, and I was going down the stairway, and he was going up. He says, hey, Zingali, he says, you can do me a favor. And I said, oh, come on. I says, what is it you want? So he says, you know, he says, I got all these graduate students and graduates and seniors taking serigraphy, and we need place to work with tables and things like that. He says, and I was looking at the space you got for beginning painters. He says, after all, he says, they don't need this sort of stuff. And I says, what are you talking about? I says, why shouldn't they have room for their easels and tabletops for their paint, for palettes? And we start talking. And I said, Meeker, I says, over my dead body. He went upstairs and I went downstairs. That was the end of it. Now, we had our clashes, yeah, as would happen.
And now we're throwing another rather volatile figure into the mix when Donald Anderson came not too long after that. Don came in about 48 or so.
No, not that late.
Was it?
You think so?
Well, 47.
Yeah,
it must have been about 47. Okay. I don't think it was right after the war, at least not according
Where
to...
Where was he, from
group.
Iowa? Was he from
yeah,
Iowa?
Yeah, he was from Iowa. Yeah,
yeah. Okay, that's, yeah. Yeah, he was sort of volatile.
Yeah. What was his specialty as a painter?
Well, watercolorist. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did watercolor. He did very good. He was a good artist. And then he knew a lot about commercial art, too.
Mm-hmm.
So he was adaptable in teaching different students. He was very militant about his views.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like none of you guys were really shy.
No. he was capable.
What about John Wilde?
Wilde,
sorry.
Well, John Wilde. He's one of those strange people that was excellent, very good, minded his own business, never was with factions, and he just went his merry way. Nothing happened.
There you go. And the other person who came in pretty quickly after the war was Warrington Colescott. What was he brought in for? What did he teach? What was his specialty? Do you remember?
Well, he was a painter. Yeah, he was a painter, and then he dealt into just about that time surrogacy came into being. That's what Meeker was. Mm-hmm. So they got together. He learned a lot probably from Meeker. And they used to try different technical things, and until he came to a point where he didn't need Meeker anymore. Yeah, I think Colescott even has a better reputation than Meeker.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about him, and I haven't heard much about Meeker at all, actually.
Well,
that's from a real contemporary point of view. I don't know. This new group of artists who came after the war, were you pretty close as a group, or did you?
You got to be kidding.
Yeah,
we used to have poker games occasionally. That's as far as it went.
That's as far as it went.
Yeah. Meeker had needed somebody to brace him up occasionally, and Anderson did that.
Mm-hmm.
Anderson constantly straightened him out. But Colescott... he's a very amiable person, he always has been. And I preferred him to Meeker very much more. Too much Oscar Wilde and Meeker and for my benefit.
Mm-hmm. A lot of other things were happening after the war in Madison on the campus. You had all the veterans coming back and taking the classes. How were the veterans as students, as art students? Did a lot of them enroll in art?
Yeah, we had a lot of them that came around, sure. Let's see, that was 46, 47.
Yeah.
Sure,
yeah.
That's when I was here in 46. And they were good students. I liked them. Well, I had to. I was part of them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So you obviously didn't have any problems with them since you were a veteran. I've heard a lot of people say that they were excellent students and that they really felt they had a lot of making up to do, a lot of lost time to make up, and
sure,
they were very serious students.
Sure.
Does that kind of go along,
yeah,
with what you were able to see?
Yeah.
How were people like Della Wilson and that group able to deal with the veterans? Did they have any... was that any problem
with
them?
I think they quit, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right. They all were kind of quitting around there. It just seems like, I guess the point I'm trying to get at is it just seems like everything was changing. I mean, just in a matter of overnight almost. Sure. Yeah. And it seems like there was a really big shift, at least in the art department, in terms of the...
faculty there.
Not only the faculty, but the directions and the attitudes and all of that kind of stuff.
We had a lot of young girls in our course, comparable in contrast to the veterans who were 3, 4, or 5 years older. A lot of the girls had to watch themselves. These guys were real men.
Yeah.
Strange.
In terms of just living in Madison at the time of after the war, did you and your wife have difficulty finding housing or anything like that?
Oh, when we first came. Well, that was when we, as a graduate student, I found difficulty in having getting a house. In fact, I lived down the bush with my wife, not this one, for a while.
That's Greenbush, the Italian area by Regent Street.
Which no longer exists anymore. And then we lived, that was still during the war, in a rooming house. We had to move out. These people were literally fleecing our clothes.
Oh my.
They had a young daughter there, and really it was terrible. We couldn't prove anything, So